In 1966, more than 200 Aboriginal stockmen and domestic workers walked off the Wavehill cattle station in Northern Territory. Led by Vincent Lignari, their two-decade-long fight for equal pay and land rights became a symbol for national change. Now, Vincent's granddaughter Rosie Smiler has co-written a children's book about the walk-off with Torres Strait Islander man Thomas Mayer. Thomas spoke with Away's Jerome Commissari about honouring the walk-off 55 years on.
My name's Thomas Mayer and I am coming to you from Larrakia country in Darwin. I'm a Torres Strait Islander, or Zenath Kes is my people. I've always lived in Darwin, in Larrakia country, and I started my working life as a wharfie. I was loading and unloading ships for about 16 years before I became a leader of the Wharfies Union, the Maritime Union of Australia. And that's what I still do today, as well as being a strong advocate for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander rights, in particular campaigning for a First Nations voice enshrined in the Constitution, because I think it's the most important thing that we can do now as a step to so much else we need to do. And I'm also an author of four books. So the new book that is authored by Rosie Smiler and I together, Rosie is granddaughter of Vincent Lignari. And so really the book tells a story about the Wavehill walk-off, and in particular Rosie's grandfather, Vincent Lignari, and how in 1966 the Gurindji people and other Aboriginal people that were working on Wavehill Station, the cattle station, got fed up with what was really slavery, and they walked off Wavehill Station.
So Thomas, what were some of the conditions that these people lived under?
Well, they were treated really poorly. They worked 16-hour days. They were only paid in rations, so just enough to keep them alive. And they, they weren't even afforded time to practice ceremony or even to bury their dead. They lived in terrible conditions.
Is this something that was consistent across Australia, or was it particularly bad at Wavehill?
Yeah, it's something that was common in those days, that Aboriginal people were treated this way.
It's something that's only really coming to light recently through some fantastic advocacy, but the amount that blackfellas did for the development of Australia that was just largely unpaid. They were largely the backbone of many Australian industries for many, many decades.
Yeah, this country was built on slavery as much as the United States was. And it's something that Australia still hasn't come to terms with. It still avoids the word slavery, as we saw Prime Minister Morrison do a while back, denying that there was slavery in this country. But how else do you describe it? You know, people working for only enough sustenance to keep them working, that's slavery.
It was certainly a horrible, horrible state of affairs. Now, let's talk about some of the events that led to Freedom Day. What were some of the catalysts that caused these people to just say, we can't hack it anymore?
Well, they had walked off previously, and there were walk-offs in other parts of the country where from cattle stations, the Pilbara. There was the Pilbara strike in the late 40s. The Newcastle Waters, there was a strike there where they walked off not long before the Gurindji Wavehill walk-off. And I think the difference that we see in the Gurindji Wavehill walk-off and the success of that is a couple of factors in particular that I'll mention, and that was the 1967 referendum. It was a year into the walk-off, but it gave confidence to the Gurindji people. It showed them that there was support from the broader population, and also the commitment before they walked off of outside support from unions like mine, the Maritime Union.
What form did that support come in? Because I understand that there was some sort of inspiration that came from a meeting in Darwin.
Yeah, so it's in the children's book that Brian Manning, who was a wharfie and a union leader in Darwin, along with Tutawali and Dexter Daniels, two Aboriginal union organisers, They met with Vincent Lingiari when he was in hospital in Darwin with a broken leg. A donkey had kicked his leg. And it was there at that meeting that they said, if you walk off Wave Hill Station, we promise that we'll be there in full support. And I think that helped inspire the walk off.
So a donkey kick to the leg helped inspire the walk off. It's a strange world, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, one thing leads to the other. And
so Vincent's in Darwin. He's in hospital. He's had a chat with Tudawali and Dexter Daniels, and then he heads back to Wave Hill. And what does he do? What kind of action does he put in motion?
Well, at Wave Hill, back there, as he had done before, he talked to the station manager, said that his people deserved equal pay, and, you know, as usual, was pretty much dismissed. And so he organised. He pulled his people together, and I imagine it would have been a meeting of all the Gurindji people, and then the following morning they walked off.
Would you care to speculate, like, how scary that could have been for the Gurindji people? I know there were other mobs there, but largely Gurindji people. Do you care to speculate how much they stood to lose there? I know they stood everything to gain, but how scary that could have been for them?
Yeah, well, to help people understand just how courageous they were, it was only a matter of a couple of decades before the walk-off that the last recorded massacre happened to their people on Gurindji country at Blackfellas Knob. And, you know, there are descriptions of that massacre that the survivors talked about. So the walk-off, the people that walked off, that was in living memory, that they were massacred. You know, they were treated extremely inhumanely, and it's an incredibly courageous thing to walk off despite that. And they did try and intimidate them. So when they walked off, they had, it was a long walk to a place where Vesti didn't own, close to the welfare centre, the policeman tried to intimidate them to turn around and go back, but they refused.
Yeah, I think that this can get a bit lost in the narrative in present day, just how dangerous doing something like this was and just how brave they were to do it. And for anyone listening who doesn't know what Vesti is, they were the family that owned the Wave Hill cattle station.
Yeah, a very rich family as well, Lord Vesti. There's an interesting thing about this story that I think maybe a decade before the walk-off, the Gurindji people, so the workers, were dying off faster than they were breeding, basically. And Lord Vesti organised for an anthropologist to visit the station and to give a report about why they were losing workers, basically dying more than they were, you know, faster than they could survive. And that's the only way they got a little bit of extra sustenance. It was really only to produce more workers, you know. I mean, treated like animals, you know, as well as slaves.
What were the living conditions that they were living under on Wave Hill under Lord Vesti?
Well, they were all put to work, really. The children running errands and doing jobs. The men mostly, doing the, you know, ringer work and working the cattle. Women were domestics and, you know, fanning the white owners as they ate, you know, all the good meat and the vegetables that the women and children grew in the gardens. And the old people, they were put to task to clean out the lavatories, you know, the outhouse, take sewerage. The nearest water was a long walk, so they had to carry water to their area. Only after that anthropologist visited, they got a few cement slabs, you know, only like 3 by 3 meters concrete slabs to put their bits of tin over for shelter. There were shocking conditions.
Now, this is the 60s. This is not very long ago. And it was a dangerous time for blackfellas to do stuff like this, an incredibly brave thing of Vincent Lingari and the rest of them to do. And they weren't mucking around. They walked off for a long time, Thomas.
Yeah, 9 years, you know, 9 years. They stood their ground. They ended up moving to Dagaragu, which is where they decided to build their own community, as Vincent Lingari says, to live on their land, their way. And all sorts of tactics were used against them through that time to try and basically force them back to work.
But they didn't relent. And what did they get out of this?
So it's interesting that that actually won equal wages before they walked off in the arbitration commission. But the strike became more than about wages and conditions. It became this struggle for land rights, and that's what really marks this this event as, you know, as greatly significant. That they stood their ground for 9 long years, despite all the tactics to divide them and break them down, and said, no, we want our land back.
Do you think that you've worked closely with the Lingari family? Do you think that that's something that resonates through strongly in this, that even though they won equal pay and were being offered all sorts of things, they said, nah, this is about something bigger than that. This is about something that is so important to us, you couldn't even understand.
Well, it says a lot about the vision of Vincent Lingari and those leaders of the time. You know, it was so far ahead, you know, and gave Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people around the country, you know, great inspiration that these mob, you know, on, you know, out in the bush in the Northern Territory were standing their ground for land back. It was a huge boost to the land rights campaign in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. What some of those flow-on effects, what were they, Thomas? Where did it go?
Well, this is a good question. They won some land back. Gough Whitlam became Prime Minister, a progressive Prime Minister, who travelled to Kalkarindji, Dagaragu, and handed some land back.
Gather round, people, I tell you a story, an 8-year-long story, power and pride, the British Lord Vesty, Vincent Lingari, were opposite men on opposite sides.
Vesty was fat with money and muscle, beef was his business, broad was his door. Vincent was lean, spoke very little, he had no bank balance, hard dirt was his floor.
From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow.
Though, you see, what happened was that although Gurindji people had land back, they were unable to affect the laws and policies that controlled how they lived their land. So Gurindji people, Aboriginal people, just wanted to live on their land, not be told what to do by white fellas. They loved working cattle, so they wanted to raise cattle, their own cattle, to eat themselves and to subsist, basically, and practice their culture. But, you know, the laws and policies stopped them from doing that. You know, the way that white fellas imposed themselves on the way they lived on their country and ran their business. And then eventually, you know, the community was opened up. It was gazetted as a town against the Gurindji people's wishes. And that opened the floodgates to all sorts of white fellas that came in and exploited them, brought in alcohol, you know, just exploited the Gurindji people, the young people, and really, yeah, it's an important factor about this, that flow-on effect. The cattle station that they started and a mine didn't last. I think it finished up in the 80s, around the mid-80s. And that was because of that paternalism, the fact is that governments, or especially the territory government, which was hugely racist, the Country Liberal Party, actively worked against them, did everything they could to destroy their success, or to stop them from having success. And this is why, ultimately, this children's book and the Gurindji family through it say, we have unfinished business. We need a voice to be able to affect the laws and policies. Otherwise, hostile governments come along and we can't hold them to account as a people on our own. We need to join up with the rest of our people.
Are you saying there's somewhat of a tragic story going on behind Mervyn Bishop's iconic photo of Gough Whitlam pouring the sand into Vincent Lingari's hand? There's more to it than that. There's still unfinished business there.
Yeah, there's a huge tragedy that follows it. You know, I mean, not to take anything away from the success of receiving that handful of land. You know, it was unprecedented at the time. It came from great courage. But it's important that people understand that what happened after that shows that there is still very much to do. What it shows is this exploitation, the efforts by, you know, governments to see that they fail. This followed that handful of sand, that iconic moment.
Let's talk about your book, Thomas. Who is it aimed at?
So it's a children's book. It's for children in upper primary, basically. It's, you know, for high school students as well and adults. You know, this is a book that, for a children's book, it's pretty wordy. But the publisher and Rosie and I agreed that the words that we'd written, there was detail in this story that was really important. So,
how important was it to you to have Rosie Lingari there, a representative of the Lingari family, watch over it as you crafted this piece?
It was vital to writing this story that Rosie and the family were involved, because at the end of the day, it's their story, and it can only be told by the Lingari family, really. And so, you know, really, I was just the writer, really, to help them to put this into a publication that can be shared with the rest of the nation and their kids going on for generations.
I assume they were happy with how it came out?
Oh, they love it, yeah. Went to Kalkarindji and read it with Rosie, read it to the children at the school there just last week, and, so much pride there. Samantha Campbell has done the illustrations and she's done a brilliant job. She didn't have much time because, well, the story is originally my daughter was going to do the artwork, but she got too busy with her life, and so
it happens.
We thought we were going to miss the anniversary, the deadline there, and but Samantha, she stepped up and she said, I can do it, and she worked many late nights to get this done.
Well, cheers, Samantha. They are beautiful illustrations. I've been lucky enough to see a few of them. So the book doesn't just deal with the walk-off. It's got some kind of throws to the future. What are they, Thomas?
Well, the book concludes with the very simple question where Rosie asks, now, will you walk with us again? And that question is being asked because there is the movement for the Uluru Statement from the Heart, which is about giving us that voice that we so badly need to affect the decisions made in the parliament.
So I've got a more of a conceptual question here for you, Thomas. These are big concepts, particularly when the history has largely been through a white prism, right? That's hard enough as it is. How do you make this accessible for kids?
Well, through this book, I think this is the way that we can teach the next generation. And the wonderful thing about children, I've learnt, is that they teach us, right? They teach the adults in their life. And they just love to take pride in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture and history.
Do you think it's important to have a for us, by us history of this for kids? This was all blackfellas doing this book. It's written for blackfellas. It's about an event largely to do with blackfellas. Is it important to have for us, by us stuff?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. These stories should really only be told by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And it's really exciting because I see publishers start to take notice of that, that this is important. I see, you know, Australian book readers acknowledging that and looking for that now. So, you know, there's great opportunity, and I say to mob out there, you know, get into it, write your story, have a go, and let's change the way this country thinks.
Absolutely. It's great advice for people out there with a story. Just get into it, because it's your story and you can tell it and people want to hear it. There's this amazing line in the book that matches an illustration that I loved, which says, as they walked west in the morning, the sun was at their backs and long shadows were cast before them. And the illustration is just incredible. It's amazing.
Oh, it's beautiful the way she's depicted that. You know, she's got the golden grass, you know, and really the colour of the land, the way that the sun, you know, hits those grasslands, and, you know, the people walking off. And really what I'm saying there as an author is that you can imagine that the people walking off with their shadows cast before them would, you know, may have thought that this of their ancestors, you know, and what happened to them, as I said, only a couple of decades before, and just how frightening it would have been.
Thomas, just finally, is there a reason that you wanted to write a book about the Wave Hill walk-off, Freedom Day, for children? Why for kids?
Because kids have not been taught the prejudices that we have been taught. So I imagine that kids imagine the world as it should be, right? When you ask a child if there should be a First Nations voice, that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people should have a say about what happens to them in this country, they say, yeah, like, why not? You know, like, how come this hasn't happened? And so I think this is the reason why it was important for this story to be to children, because children teach us then about the way that the world should be, and then it's up to us to make it that way.
That was Thomas Mayer, co-author of the children's book Freedom Day, Vincent Lignari and the Story of the Wave Hill Walk-Off. The book is published by Hardy Grant and is available this month.